I remember as a young boy going into the post office with my parents. I was raised in a small town, and we didn't have house-to-house postal delivery. The only place that we could get our mail was in a post office box. So there was no mailman that came around, and there was no mailbox out in the front yard or anything like that, or by the front door. If you got any mail, everyone had to go to the post office. And I remember going in the post office, and they always had this bulletin board with some individuals' pictures on it that was wanted. And think about years ago, they used to post those kind of things, and they might put up above that this person was wanted, dead or alive. And I was thinking about whether something is dead or alive. I've been noticing how, have you ever paid attention to how resilient live things are to decay? As soon as something does not have life in it, what has happened to it? It starts decaying. It starts deteriorating. There's a house just down the road from us, about probably a little over a half a mile, that when we moved there, no one lived in it. And it wasn't grown up terribly. And there was an old car that was sitting in the front of, up close to the front of the house, just like they parked it there and never, I don't know if it wouldn't start or they just abandoned it there. And over the last 18 years or so, I've watched that get more and more grown up to where you can barely tell that there is a house there. And I've noticed over the course of this past winter that the house is caving in. I would be very, very fearful about trying to go inside it because the roof is down about the level of the floor for the upstairs. And my guess is that the downstairs is not much better than the upstairs. And it's pretty much becoming just a pile of lumber. And it's really not any usable lumber. It's so deteriorated. But, you know, if that house had someone living in it, the first little sign of a leak, someone would have been addressing that to some point, even if they just put a tarp over the roof. But because there's no life in the house, the materials it's made out of begins to deteriorate and crumble. And we take a live tree that seems to be impervious to the weather around us, one that's adjusted for our climates, and we cut it down and cut it up and take the life out of it. And we try to do things that preserves the wood so it'll maintain its strength and its integrity for building materials. But it takes a lot of effort to keep a dead piece of wood from deteriorating, whether you paint it or you treat it or you soak it. When something, it's a lot of work. But if there was life there, and the things that God designed to go through those pores of the wood, it doesn't matter if it's freezing, if it's thawing, if it's raining. The trees at my place that are alive have done well. I've noticed over the year that this spring in particular, I've noticed that things, not everything leaps out and gives us the evidence of life at the same time. And we got some rose bushes at our place that I've come to the decision that one of them is dead, because I have two or three rose bushes that have leaves, that have blossoms on them, and this one has neither. And it's high time. It should have shown some signs of life. It's dead. There's trees. Every year there's another tree that dies down in my woods, it seemed like. And maybe it was mostly dead last year, but it's really dead this spring. There's no leaves on it. So, you know, just thinking about things being dead or alive, and this morning as we look into this, I desire the Lord would help us to know how to illustrate and to bring out the thought of how important it is for us to know how to differentiate between what ought to be alive and what ought to be dead. In Daniel, the sixth chapter is where I'd like to start this morning, just thinking about natural life and all. Let's go to Daniel, the sixth chapter. And we know the background of this story is where Daniel was accused of not being devoted to the king enough. The people were looking for places to try to incriminate Daniel, and they found one because of his integrity with God and his desire to be pleasing to him and his habit of praying. And so they designed a rule to catch him, and they did. And the consequence was that he would be put in the den of lions. I'd like to pick up the story in the 16th verse. It says, "Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." Now Daniel had proved himself a capable, valuable component to this king's government system, and he was someone that I believe there was no question in the king's mind as to Daniel's abilities or his... I don't think he was even fearful of Daniel trying to usurp authority over him or undermine his sovereignty or anything like that. He was the ideal person to have in a place of authority, and someone that would administrate and manage the affairs of the nation with utmost diligence. His character was impeccable, I believe. So when it come down to it and the king realized that he had signed something into a law that at his own disappointment, maybe is not the best word, but that's what comes to my mind right now. So he called Daniel, and as he was getting ready for him to be cast into the den of the lions, I don't know if there was any loud speaking that day or accusations or I don't know who all witnessed this, but I can see just at the mouth of the lion's den, the king just stepping up close to Daniel and saying, "Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." I see him saying that to Daniel kind of in an undertone, maybe designed to where the others couldn't hear. Maybe he was hoping, or maybe he chose a time where it was just the two of them together and the others that had made the accusations weren't even within earshot. I don't know. But Daniel knew that the king wanted him to be alive. So it says in verse 17, "And the stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, when the signet of his lords, and with that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. And the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste into the den of lions. It was a long night for the king. I believe he paced the floor. I believe he chewed his fingernails. I believe he done everything possible in his power to try to get the idea that he had made a... Can you imagine how he would have felt? Here, I'm the one that signed this into a law to put this man to death, that he's one of the most trusted, valuable people in my kingdom, and I have been coerced. I imagine he was thinking, how can I live with myself after this has happened? He's probably thinking, I'd almost change places with Daniel. He is such an incredible person. I know that he's so valuable to me as an individual, to the kingdom. And he passed the night chewing his fingernails and walking the floor and going up and down. And maybe he went outside and maybe he went up on the roof and maybe he went down. I think he mumbled to himself. I think people were saying, is there anything we can do for you? And he was probably curt and he was probably short with them. And you know what I'm talking about. He was at his wit's end all night. And he said that he went down there early and went in haste into the den of lions. Verse 20, and when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. Don't you know that was a welcome sound to the ears of that king? My God has sent his angels and has shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me for as much as before him, and innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Daniel knew that he had not done anything amiss. The king knew that. And then the king was exceeding glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner was hurt. A manner of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God. This is probably the first time that anybody had been lifted up out of the lion's den. Every time else that anyone had been cast in there, the only thing that might have been evidenced was a few bones down there. The first time anybody come out of that lion's den. And the feeling of euphoria and ecstasy and everything else that could have happened, possibly happened, was just, I can imagine the king was just bubbling over with excitement that Daniel was still alive. I imagine Daniel probably had tears in his eyes of gratitude for the Lord's blessings. You know, it's such a blessing to have physical life and health that we can spend with our families and with our children and with our parents. And it'd be such a blessing. And you know, if my mother could be here today, would be her birthday. And she would be 87 today. And it'd be nice if she could be here and be in our services and be well and healthy and all of that. I'm thankful that she's in a much better place today and she's not suffering at all. But it'd be wonderful to have my parents here. It'd be wonderful to have maybe my grandparents. Wouldn't that be incredible to have? Here I am starting to get old, and it'd be nice to have my grandparents here too, but the Lord knows all about that. Life. How much of a blessing is it? that king is not still alive, although Daniel said, O king, live forever. He's not still alive. Daniel's not alive any longer. But we have an opportunity to live forever with God, spiritually. I don't believe any of us here have any physical signs of death, because if we did, we would have stayed home. We would have said, I'm too sick to go to service. We don't have it. We're feeling pretty good. Very seldom do people come to church if they're not feeling good. I'm not saying you should come and spread anything. I'm just saying that there's times we ought to push against a few things. But if there's any remote sign that we might be deteriorating, it's usually a good excuse to stay home. So I believe we're all feeling good today. There's all kinds of things that can, physical dilemmas that can sprout late Saturday night or early Sunday morning. And it's sure a sign of death. I better stay home. So I feel like that we are feeling reasonably well today. You know, the reason that Daniel was physically alive was due totally and entirely to his spirit being in tune with God. Every bit of the glory of Daniel being physically well and healthy in the morning was because of his integrity with the Lord and because his relationship with God was alive. It wasn't kind of dead, got a tree in my front yard that I'm going to have to do something with because it's got almost as many dead limbs as it does live limbs. And dead limbs are always falling out of it, and I'm really afraid that a big one's going to die and it's going to land on my house someday. So I'm going to have to do something. I just don't know what the plan should be. You know, possums are famous for playing dead when they're very much alive. And then when everything quits bothering them and chewing on them and dragging them around, and they know it's safe, they get up and crawl off. So I don't want us to play dead. And I don't want us to be partially dead. Really partially dead. Spiritually. Because spirituality, our relationship with the Lord, I believe helps us to have physical health too. But it is our relationship with the Lord is what I'm concerned about today. So I ask us this morning, are we dead or are we alive? Are we showing signs of death or are we cultivating the things that will cause us to be alive? Let's go to Romans, the 6th chapter. I'd like to begin reading in the first verse. Romans chapter 6. Paul says here, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Dead to sin. That means the effects of sin don't have any life in them any longer. That means that they are deteriorating. The effects are deteriorating. It says, know ye not that so many of us as were baptized unto Jesus Christ were baptized unto his death? What did he die for? He died for the sins of mankind. And he says, therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in the newness of life. So just as Jesus was buried and laid in a tomb for the sins of mankind, And he was raised up from the dead by the glory of God, this verse says. Even so, we also should walk in the newness of life. We should be alive. We should be able to be alive because he was buried for the sins of mankind. And we should be able to exhibit the resilience of being alive. Remember, if life begins to diminish, deterioration begins to set in. So the way to keep from deteriorating is to keep alive. If we quit moving, if we quit exercising, did you know that we will become more inflexible? I'm at a place in my life that if I keep busy, I feel good. If I sit down for very long, I start hurting. I don't know altogether. Maybe it's arthritis. But if I sit still for very long and then try to get up and walk, there's pains that I didn't have before I sat down. I got to fight against lethargy. And I do it physically, but I've got to do the same thing spiritually. Because the indications of death creeping in will start showing up. There'll be some leaks. There will be some things that starts to indicate that it's not alive anymore. So how do we know what's dead and what's alive? What's alive? What are our indicators? He says, knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him, verse 6, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. The body of sin is crucified. The end result of crucifixion is death. So the body of sin should be crucified, and it should die and not be able to continually function. All right? For he that is dead is free from sin. Did you know when you're literally dead, you can't sin anymore? But he's talking about that, and he's also talking about being dead to sin and alive physically. You follow that? That's important. If you die physically, the probability or the possibility of you continuing to sin ceases. All right? But he's talking about something more than that. He's talking about the old man, it says, that the old man is crucified with him, verse 6, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. From the day forward that the body of sin was crucified, that we should not serve sin. For he that is dead is freed from sin. Now, if we be dead with Christ, we believe we shall also live with him. So we believe, this is the hope of the gospel, we believe that if we crucify the flesh, the body of sin, and we are resurrected, if we are baptized into his resurrection and resurrected from the watery grave, that's what we teach. Baptism is a symbol of that. It's a testimony to the world that the old man's been crucified and I have come out of that watery grave. My testimony is that by the grace of God, I'm alive now in the spirit. That old man that caused me to do things that were unlike God has been crucified. He says, if we be dead with Christ, we believe we shall also live with him, knowing that Christ, being raised from the dead, dieth no more. Death hath no more dominion over him. Sin should not have power over us. But did you know that the world wants to impose some symptoms on us? That's the plan of the devil. He wants to impose some signs of death on us. For in that he died unto sin once, but in that he liveth unto God. Likewise, reckon ye also yourselves to be dead indeed unto sin, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Let not sin, therefore, reign in your mortal bodies, that ye should obey it in the lust thereof. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin. Why? Because it's a sign of death. Don't yield your members as instruments of unrighteousness. What's he talking about? Tools for unrighteousness? Avenues of unrighteousness? Don't allow your everyday life to become entangled with things that have the flavor of sin. You know how we can pick up a bag of there's so many different flavors of potato chips today. It never ceases to amaze me. There's salt and vinegar, and there's, you know, when I was young, it seemed like there was just plain and barbecue. But now there's salt and vinegar, there's sour cream. I kind of remember where sour cream and onion, thought it was one of the best improvements they ever made. And then there's, I don't know, some of them are pretty strange. And some of them end up on the surplus food deal because they don't sell very good. They just don't sound good. But he says, don't yield your members that are now should be alive unto God. Don't allow them to become instruments of unrighteousness. Don't allow them to take on the flavor of sin. They might look like a potato chip. They might look like, in some respects, maybe there's a testimony, maybe there's a profession, but there's a smell, there is a flavor, there's a taste of sin. He said, don't do that. He said, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto the Lord. You know, we should taste and smell like what spiritual life should taste and smell like. We should exhibit, our character should exhibit the things that demonstrate spiritual life. He says, for sin shall not have dominion over you, for ye are not under the law, but under grace. Lord, help us to demonstrate the things that should be alive and the things that should be dead. Did you know, we've already mentioned that some perennials, some plants, some things seem to bloom. I have an apricot tree, and it is determined to be the first one to bloom in the spring. And one of its signs of life is it blooms, and then the green leaves come on. And then my plum tree blooms, and then the green leaves come on. And then my peach trees bloom, and then the green leaves come on. And somewhere along in there, the apple tree does the same thing afterward. And that's the order. They've been doing that for years now. But not everything blooms first. My grass in my yard Well, I have some weeds there too, but the grass itself just starts greening up. It doesn't make flowers before it shows signs of life. What signs should we be demonstrating? Signs of life. You know, there's places I like things to be dead. And that is in my garden. I like it when I till the garden and it looks like all of the grass and the weeds from last year is dead. It's just the soil that's been cultivated. It's been worked up. There's nothing green out there at all. I like that. And then I go plant my tomatoes and whatever else I plant, maybe some seeds. And for maybe a week, it looks so nice. But then what happens? There's things that I want to be dead, but it starts coming back up. There's this little tiny blade that comes up, and it looks like, I don't know, it's maybe 3/16 of an inch long the first time it's just a little tiny blade. Buddy, if you don't get on that, it's going to take over. And you won't be able to find your tomatoes, and you won't be able to find your green beans or your corn or whatever else. It's going to choke it out. Did you know that there's things that we should want to be dead in our life? So I want to ask us this morning, I won't try to keep us much longer, I want to ask us this morning, is the man of sin dead? Or does he keep sprouting? Is there things that should be under the blood, should have been buried with Christ, that should have the victory over and it still wants to crop up its head? It still wants to try to take over in my life. Some weeds and some behaviors of sin, some flavors of sin, some smells of sin, are what we would call invasive species. You just go out to where there's Bermuda grass and try to plant a garden and see what happens. It's almost impossible. Anywhere a little sprig of dead looking, you know, Bermuda grass is the plant version of a possum. You can take a little piece of it, break it off, and drop it in somebody's flower bed and give it a little moisture and a little time, and pretty soon they got Bermuda grass in their flower bed. It can look dead, and maybe it was kind of dead, but it comes back to life. And you know, there's things that we think, surely I got the victory over pride. Surely I got the victory over lust or hatred or envy or something, or wanting to be like the world. That thing has been dried out, like laying out in the sun, parched and brown. But just let it get in a fertile soil place and look out. Here it comes again. So the things that ought to be dead, if it's starting to grow, cut it off. Let's make sure it stays dead. You know that, I don't want to be too gross, but there's a way to make sure that the possum is really dead. And not just playing dead. And there's a way to make sure that the Bermuda grass stays dead and stays out of my flower bed in my garden. And there's ways to ensure that the things of the world that ought to be dead stay dead. We have to put things that ought to be alive. We have to cultivate the things that ought to be alive. The close connection with the Lord, the yielding and the humbling of ourselves before Him. We have to cultivate those things. And the things that should be dead, make sure they stay dead. Make sure that they don't start sprouting. And when they do, we have to stay on top of it. I want the things that ought to die to stay dead. And I want the things that ought to be the sign of life, I want them to be nurtured. I want them to be able to grow and to develop. And I have to apply myself. He says, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? No. God forbid. How do we expect to prosper spiritually and keep smelling like sin? Keep kind of looking like sin? Keep just barely inside the fence, so to speak. So I want to challenge us this morning to assess, have we got some dead limbs this morning? Have we got some things that needs to be trimmed out of our life? Have we got some evidence of deterioration? Is there something there that is been able to grow because my hungering and thirsting for righteousness has not been up to what it really should be? Maybe we need to do a little pruning. Maybe we got to give some room for some fruit to be born. You know, in the book of John, it talks about being a branch on the vine, being part of the true vine, and how that vines are taken care of by someone that takes care of grapevines. They prune them and they cut away the things that are unprofitable, and then they begin to be, they bear more fruit. I want to be pruned if that's what it takes. I want to cut out the dead stuff. I want to cut out the signs of dead, spiritual death. I want to cut it out. I want to have the signs of spiritual life exhibited. I desire your prayers. I want you to know that I pray for each one of us here that you'll grow, that you'll prosper spiritually, and that you'll have a desire to be found alive in the Lord, that you'll be able to be in a place that God can put His stamp of approval upon you. You pray for me.